3, 2, 1.
Here's some words for you. Ascension, atonement, resurrection, rebirth, suffering, eggs, death, transmutation, transformation, betrayal, blessing, bunnies, release, revelation, contemplation, crucifixion, chocolate, sacrifice, immortality. Those are the many themes that the Easter story teaches us. Deepak Chopra wrote, the symbolic language of the crucifixion is the death of the old paradigm, and the resurrection is a leap into a whole new way of thinking, into a way of thinking this way. Resurrection. Resurrection is probably one of the biggest themes of Easter. And as I thought about it this week, I was wondering, is there something we really need to resurrect? Because needing to resurrect something implies that something was dead. And even if some good, or the original good, we should say, seems to have disappeared from our consciousness, from our life, from our thoughts, from our actions, it's not dead. It is merely misplaced and can be easily found again by looking sharp at the truth. The truth that we talk about every week, the truth that I write about every week, the truth that I write about in my book, and then living it. Or if we haven't been living it, if we haven't been being it, then living it again. Deciding this moment right here, right now is day one, is moment one, is second one. And from now on, I will be living this revelation of the divine that is within me and all the powers that that includes. Yeshua, Jesus, delivered a powerful, blessed message when he said, in his own words, in the original Aramaic, he basically said, each person has an immortal divine power within. He said that the same power that is within me is within you. And yet now, 2,000 plus years later, have we gotten it? Did we get it? Did we get what he was teaching, his short 33 years? What he went through to teach that? What happened around this Holy Week, the Easter week? Or are we like the Hebrews with Moses and the Jews during Jesus' time and aren't listening? We're hearing the word. We're even maybe even intellectualizing the word, yet we're not embodying it. And I include myself in that sometimes too. See, the great example that Jesus was felt at the time that he had to make a great and dramatic sacrificial example. That the crucifixion was inevitable because so many weren't getting his ministry. It is said you can't have a resurrection without a crucifixion, nor a betrayal, both which happened in the Easter story. And I get the metaphor. It's about forgiveness of self-betrayal, the bad choices of ideas and people we held onto or hold onto, and transmuting that to a new level of consciousness. But a crucifixion? Do we really need to go through that? Do we even need to have it metaphorically? Must there be a no pain, no gain thing going on in life, a getting to rock bottom necessity going on in life? I say no. I say it's not necessary. And I think that's what Yeshua, that's what Jesus was teaching as well. It's not necessary to go through all this pain, to even go through a death. to even be the example by being nailed to the cross or to a cross. You don't need that. See, it's been done. You don't have to get to this, is what the Easter story was talking about. Now, I can understand. I totally get it. It's happened to me. Transformations can be painful. Yes, of course. But do we have to invite that? Do we have to invite the idea of having to have some sort of excruciating release, either physically or emotionally, to transcend? I say no. Maybe that's why the whole bunnies and chocolate are part of Easter to sweeten up the process. But look, I don't want to kill or crucify limiting beliefs to resurrect the divine me. I just want to replace them before they get in the way. I can see how things are moving in life. And instead of killing it, I can replace it. Instead of even stopping it, I can focus on what it is I want. I don't need to resurrect anything. I only need to reveal that thing itself, God, or whatever you want to call it, that divinity itself, that power and presence of the universe, the power and the energy and the vibration of the Big Bang. What is already alive within me. And what is just seemingly playing hide and seek a little bit because I've let something get in my way or someone get in my way. It's an act of busting through, just like a plant that breaks through the seed and grows, a chick that breaks through the egg, a butterfly that breaks through the cocoon. It's a birthing, but it doesn't have to come through pain. It's a transmutation. It's a breaking out of one's shell, one's comfort zone sometimes, which can be a little painful, at least emotionally, a little scary maybe sometimes. And breaking out of the old ways, those old ways of believing that never amounted to anything positive, at least, and emerging into the new. We can see how it's going historically, and just stop and focus and turn within and know that if my purpose now is to bring forth the divinity that is already revealing itself, then I open my heart and my mind and my intuition to the information that will push me forward. And yes, there may be a transition period. I totally get it. And most people won't want to move too quickly through that and ascend. But it's in this transition. It's in this moment, which doesn't have to be super painful or a crucifixion of any sort of kind. This liminal space, as we've talked about before, the kind of contemplative neutral zone, where our body and our consciousness readies itself for our next expression. And sometimes it can be a little confusing, like I've talked about before. But it is in this moment where we can sit and go, whoa, this is some crazy stuff going on. I need to focus on, I need to reboot, I need to recenter, I need to ground myself and reinstate my at-one-ment with the divinity that is already within me. And you call that divinity whatever you want. But don't shortchange this process. Just don't expect it to be painful. If it is, it is. But don't expect it to be. Because then, as we expect pain, we open ourselves to repeat old patterns and old mistakes. There's this great piece by Walt Whitman, and he wrote, "The moment you stand up and claim your divinity, Christ is reborn within your heart. Buddha rejoices. Muhammad dances upon the mountaintop. Lao Tzu winks approvingly. And the promise of the tree of life is fulfilled. And I know that the hand of God is the promise of my own and I know that the Spirit of God is the brother of my own, and that all men ever born are also my brothers, and the women my sisters. Walt Whitman. So when you feel your hope is about to break, begin by clinging to that unchanging grace of the divine that's within you. Start there. And go ahead. Let the waters come. Let the earth give way. But know it's okay, because you can be resurrected right here, right now. You can break out of your shell or comfort zone right here, right now. You can stand up and reclaim your divine self in your thoughts, in your feelings, and in your actions. You can do it because you have the power in you. The divinity, that power of the Big Bang is in you right here, right now. And soon you'll just be dancing in the rain with joy in your heart and your feet on the rock. Your feet on the rock of all ages. Just let go, release, and let the universe have your back. Leviticus 23:5-8 says, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at dusk, is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of the Unleavened Bread unto the Lord. And 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. In the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no manner of servile work, and ye shall bring an offering made by fire unto the Lord 7 days. In the 7th day is a holy convocation. Ye shall do no manner of servile work. That was the announcement of celebrating and honoring the Passover story. And every year I like to tell, I guess, my version of the Passover story. And here it goes. So 3,300 or so years ago, there was an orphan boy who was also a husband. He was father of two. He was a shepherd by trade, a defector of the government, a murderer, actually, and one who they say was possibly a stutterer. And his name was Moses. And Moses means out of water, very interestingly, because he was found floating in water. On a Thursday afternoon in his 80th year, Moses was, you know, out walking his flock in the barren desert of Midian, his sheep, when suddenly he came upon this bush on fire, a burning bush, you might say. In fact, it was a talking burning bush that insisted that Moses take his sandals off before entering its property. I'm sure you have friends like that who insist you take your shoes off before coming into their house. Well, the flaming, burning bush insisted that as well. So the flaming bush told our hero, look, I see what's happening to your people, to the Hebrews, and I don't like it, and I need you to fix it. So go down there to Egypt and tell Pharaoh, let my people go. Well, Moses freaked. I mean, this was a task that was definitely out of his comfort zone. And he said, nobody's going to believe me, man. Who could I possibly say sent me to insist on such a thing from Pharaoh? And the fiery bramble said in a very commanding voice, tell them, Aye, Asher, Aye, I am that I am sent to. And basically, Spirit, through this burning bush, was saying, look, I see what's going on. I'm not here to magically fix your problems for you, but I'm totally here to support you with all the power you might need. So go get them, tiger. Nonetheless, Our hero was still in doubt, not believing the universe had his back. I mean, who hasn't felt that way at times? You see a burning bush out of nowhere. You know, you're at work, maybe on a break. Burning bush shows up. It talks to you. You can't believe that. You're not going to believe that. It's not possible. That's not how the universe is going to converse with me, you might think. Well, Moses felt the same way. But anyway, Moses says, well, bush, God, whoever you are, have you met this guy? Have you met Pharaoh? He's not going to care that I am that I am sent me to tell him to let my people go. Come on now. Well, dodo brain, replied the bush, you don't actually say it. You know it. And then you show it. At least act as if, Mose. Jeez. Then the infinite being showed Moses a few talents that Moses didn't know that he had that might impress the Pharaoh into letting his people go. And to prove to Pharaoh that the divine was within Moses and that he could confidently be a representative of that power. In this case, it was that stick into a serpent trick. Very impressive. Great with the ladies. But still not convinced, though, our little 80-year-old rascal brought up another one of his limiting beliefs, thinking, surely this is a detriment to this whole affair, not caring what powers he was able to produce, what sticks he was able to turn into serpents. And that was his speech impediment. Look, said the bush, have a little faith, dude. I am giving you this job because of that. If I sent some big, handsome guy like Charlton Heston, for instance, everyone would be wowed. Yeah, but it's better that they are wowed by the energy of my presence in you. Moses, said the book, Moses, you are unique. You are a unique expression of me. I created you and will always be there for you, in you. Remember, just call my name and I'll be there. But still, Moses wasn't convinced. Did you ever have that? Think back in retrospect and you see the signs from the universe showing you the next step on your journey and you didn't listen? I know I have. Red flags. It's like a burning bush, a bright light in the sky, and I still didn't get it at first. So anyway, back to our story. The universe in its cause and effect splendor says, listen, geez, okay, it doesn't matter to me. So if you want to do it the hard way, Moses, great, fine. Believe what you want about yourself. Think that it's practically impossible. I'll help you out with that. So why don't I just harden Pharaoh's heart and make it that much more difficult for you? How's that? You ask, you get. Go have a blast, be happy, but get your people free. It's all in you. The power's in you. Now, the lesson here is if you think something's going to be difficult, the universe is happy to oblige your limiting belief. That's how the law works. It's happy to bring into your experience that which you believe will experience. That doesn't have a judgment, the law. The universe doesn't have a judgment on what you want, what you don't want, and how you want it. However, as Rumi reminds us, the inspiration you seek is already within you. All you have to do is be silent and listen. And if we don't take those moments to be silent and listen, then we just kind of rush through life. And as we rush through life, so many times we have these thoughts and beliefs that the universe is going to act upon that is not in our favor. Anyway, let's continue with the rest of the story. So Moshe, as he might be called, as some of his friends might call him, goes to Egypt, gets an audience with the Pharaoh, who says, no, no. And no, over and over and over again. He wasn't impressed by the stick to the serpent thing. Even Moses' brother Aaron, who's a very good speaker, goes on the circuit, the speaking circuit. I believe Aaron did a TED talk as they had them in 3,300 years ago. He wasn't even any help. Then the 10 plagues happen. Now, it's important to note here, as we're in the 10 plagues, that the Hebrews were in bondage, yes. Physically, yes. But not just physically. They were in bondage emotionally and spiritually. They believe they were a bondaged people. They accepted their strife was their truth, and not just a fact of their present circumstances, thus making it harder for them and any of us in any similar limited belief to leave the constricted place or the constricted space in consciousness, which is what our story is about in Egypt. They weren't getting it. They weren't getting that they were the power. They were the boss. They were the Pharaoh of their experience. With the Hebrews' perspective on life, they gave that power away. So anyway, after the first nine plagues, what a mess that was, bloody Nile River, probably red algae, really, frogs and lice and flies, dead livestock, though that's probably some sort of animal virus, boils on all over the place, possibly a smallpox, a pandemic that was going on at the same time. A fiery hail showed up, which might have been a volcanic eruption. Who knows? Locusts. And a three-day-long darkness, which possibly could be the eclipse of 1223. Maybe. Anyway, after all those nine plagues happening right after another, not a nice few weeks, it was time for number 10, the big kahuna, which is where the holiday gets its name, the Passover holiday. And that was the plague, the killing of the firstborn Egyptian sons. Except the angel of death passed over the houses where lamb or goat's blood was splashed on the sides and the tops of the door frames. And there were other little rules about that, but that was the big one, that you put the blood of the lamb or the goat on your door frames. But only the Hebrews knew about this bit, this little bit of magic, this little sign. So that did the trick for the Hebrews, and not so good for the Pharaoh and some of the other non-Hebrew Egyptians who didn't know to do this, for they lost their firstborn sons. And like I said, so did Pharaoh, and that did it for him. And Pharaoh told the Hebrews, you know what? Have your freedom, hit the road, get out of here, gang. Now that brings us to the big segment of the tale where we have the parting of the Red Sea. So these millions of people have been in bondage for like 430 years or some ungodly amount. And doesn't that seem like some of your limiting beliefs? Don't they seem like they've been around that long, 430 years? Anyway, they've come all this way. They're out of bondage. They're out of slavery. They're out of their misery, supposedly. They've survived those plagues I talked about. They're finally on their way to the promised land, and suddenly they hit a wall. A wall of water, it happens to be. Some water that the Red Sea that is impassable, and it's wide. And, you know, they didn't think ahead. They didn't have any boats. And scouts warned that the Pharaoh and his army, which are representations of their past BS that was going on in their consciousness, that army was on their tails. The Pharaoh wasn't just going to let them go. They're just going to have a fight in the desert, according to Pharaoh. And what do the Hebrews do? After they put their whole consciousness into Moses's way, Moses's word, and he brought all this, all these ideas into them and brought them towards freedom and was bringing them to the promised land. And what do? They start pleading for help. They whine and bitch and moan about the obstacle, the setback, the army coming at them. They're still in that mindset that there's always something in the way. And of course, boom, it shows up. And it shows up from both ends, so to speak. They're not sitting in their truth. It's like the old joke, I sent you a boat, I sent you a helicopter. They're just sitting on that roof, not believing that the universe is going to work for them if they just believe it. Here's an opportunity for growth and progress and leaping past this previous junk thinking by connecting with the divine within and transcending into declaring and revealing with the gratitude, with the acceptance for what it is to be. And they just piss and moan and forget who they truly are, who Moses has been telling them who they truly are, who Moses has been showing them who they truly are, just like Yeshua did in the Easter story. Well, I guess you can take the people out of Egypt, but you can't always take the Egypt out of the people. But Moses, the activist that he was, steps up. He's pretty confident now, you know? He's evolved by involving himself, by reaching out with the power of the divine intelligence, the creative loving energy of the universe, the I am that the bush told him. Is already within him. He stretched out his hands and the sea went back by a strong east wind all that night and finally made the sea, where the sea was, into dry land, into a path. The Red Sea parted, allowing the Hebrews to move forward on their journey to their greatness and leaving behind, eventually drowned, dead, and buried, a huge chunk of their limiting beliefs and old stories that you could call the Pharaoh and the Egyptian army. They drowned. As the story goes, they went down the path of the parted Red Sea. They got on the other side. The Red Sea went back in. But by that time, Pharaoh and his army had tried to chase them and didn't get all the way through. And so when the waters came back, they drowned. And that's only the beginning of the story. There's still this whole wandering in the desert for 40 years, the Ten Commandments thing, the other burning bush conversation that Moses had, the golden calf thing, because again, they weren't believing in somebody who was loud, made them believe again in their strife, and that Moses' ideas weren't the way, that revealing the divinity in them wasn't the way. So they listened to the loud voice instead of the true voice. But for all that, you can go watch the movie. Charles Fillmore wrote, "In the unfoldment of the spiritual mind, there are periods when the ideas that we have meditated on and accepted as true spring forth into consciousness, becoming living realities in our life instead of mere mental concepts. In this awakening, we get the fruits of the ideas that we have planted in our mind. We have escaped from darkness, a la Egypt, and have entered into light, the promised land." You know, there's a saying at the end of the Passover dinner, "Lashana haba'a bit Yerushalayim." Next year in Jerusalem, next year in the city of peace, not necessarily as a location to go to, but the city of peace that is within each and every one of us, no matter where we are. The universal, unconditional divine love that surrounds us all the time. And the law that says thoughts become things. Feelings spark facts. Beliefs manifest biography. On Palm Sunday, Yeshua entered Jerusalem, the city of peace, to change the biography of the Hebrews at that time, to free his community. And the Passover biography teaches us that we must be our own Moses. We must be our own redeemer of the truth and not allow others to become the boss. and not allow ourselves to become bitter during that time. Hold on to the past over and over again and harden our hearts like Pharaoh did. Today on this, what many believe is a holy week, I invite you to free yourself of the bondage of limited consciousness. Enter your land of milk and honey. Step into the promised land, your city of peace, and transcend to the I am, that you are. The vibration of beauty, peace, power, light, life, love, joy, and wisdom that is not only in you, but is always there to support you. Stand upon the rock of all ages. Part the sea if you must, and resurrect yourself to the freedom of your authentic self. Thank you so much. Namaste.